As you know, this meeting we do a step tradition, living clean, and if there are four Friday, Mondays of the month, we do a just for today reading. Tonight we're doing our speaker meeting, and it is my privilege to introduce to you Gwen, who I know from another meeting I usually go to. And oh my God, I'm terribly excited to hear her share. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Gwen. You can talk for, 30, 40 minutes if you like, whatever you're most comfortable with. And the floor is yours. Thank you again for being a service, and thank you allowing me to be a service. And back to you, Gwen.
Wow, thank you so much, Michael. 30 or 40 minutes, that is a long time. But I'm sure that the words will find me. I'm Gwen, and I am an addict. And
Hi,
hello,
Gwen.
everyone. Oh my God, it's just so joyful the way that everybody says hello. This is my first time on this platform. And yeah, my control issues are going crazy. I want to see you all, I want to see all of your faces. So that I can, I mean, I tell myself it's so that I can feel the connection that I feel beaming through the screen, but actually, in there, it's definitely some hypervigilance and control going on. I want to imagine what it is. I want to make some judgment calls and imagine what it is that you need or want me to say in order to love me. And yeah, it just feels really good to be able to start by admitting that, by getting honest about that. That's what I learned to do here, in this program. So, but yeah, the jumping in and the hellos and the thank yous is just a joyful thing. So thank you for that. So just before the meeting started, people were talking about numbers of days, and it's really amazing that we've got such a range of a breadth of experience and different stages of recovery in this virtual space. And I looked mine up because numbers still terrify me, and make my brain shut down. And I have 748 days today, so that's just over 2 years. And I'm imagining the wild applause that's happening on your screens at the moment. Yeah, and I'm really, really, really grateful. Just going to land in that feeling for a minute, the gratitude of having just over 2 years, because just over 2 years ago, when I came in, I was in a really different place to where I am today. I was using on a daily. I was using in secret, and I just couldn't stop. And I kind of found myself in a fork in the road. Walk into the sea, or carry on as I'm going, and neither of those seemed very attractive options, you know. But I was just so desperate, and instead, I tried the third way and I logged onto a meeting. I'm so grateful for these virtual platforms because this is the way in my recovery journey. It saved my life. I've in those early days. You know, I've been thinking back to that time, and I was so wobbly, and I just poured myself between the containers of recovery. So I just jumped from meeting to meeting to meeting all around the world. Like I hear voices and people in different places in the moment, and found what I was so desperate for, which was connection. And I found love, and I found people to hold me when the feelings felt too big, which was pretty much all the time. Still feels like that sometimes. And it took me quite a while to think about what isolation, really the isolation that were that what that meant to me in my addiction journey, because I was surrounded by people. I mean, right at the very end, a lot of the using was done on my own in my little basement, my rainbow basement flat. But still, I was doing stuff like conducting mental health choirs online and running around feeding the homeless and just creating emergencies. I mean, we were all in an emergency, but there were so many more of my own making and putting myself at the center of them. That's how the self-centeredness of this disease that I've had come to learn manifests itself in my thinking and my addiction, is that everything is my fault and everything is my responsibility. And I was surrounded, like on each wall, I had a different wall of post-its. And I'm a musician composer, and on one wall I had the structure for an opera about colonialism and the repercussions of colonialism and the Mau Mau rebellion. And on another wall I had like how to save the community from isolation during the pandemic, because I was part of this community activism group. And on the other wall, I had my life admin, which included filing for divorce. And I was running from the grief of that. That was like my too hard basket wall. And on the final wall, I had my friend's restaurant that I had somehow kind of put myself right in the center of. I mean, I learned to code in 3 days in order to help that. And that, whenever I want to be reminded of what the unmanageability felt like, I think of all those post-its just surrounded by colored squares of paper and feeling to be crushed by them all at any time. And all a lot, you know, and throughout this time, just using to stay awake, using to have a shower, using to open an envelope, using to not open an envelope, using to brush my teeth, going for days without brushing my teeth. It was that I was very used to living, you know, before coming into recovery. I was definitely a rebel without, you know, I didn't understand. Once I just jumped from project to project, and I see now my workaholism, as much as I adore my work, I love it so much. Yeah, that kind of unmanageability that had been a really familiar rhythm in my life for such a long time, like ever since I can remember, actually, that kind of level of intensity. Because I grew up in a house that was full of love, but I learned that love came with conditions, or that was what I heard, and that in order to receive that love, I had to be constantly spectacular. I had to be always happy. And I also, in order to feel safe, I had to look after everybody around me. I felt like overly responsible for the emotions of my family from a really young age. And I'm on a journey to understanding that and finding grace and forgiveness for that, because the reality is that my parents really were doing the best that they can good with what they had. My dad grew up in a really difficult household. His dad was an alcoholic, a very violent alcoholic, and he was adopted too, so he had that kind of sense of not belonging that I think as addicts, well, I speak for myself, is definitely a part of my makeup and my disease. And my mum had no real emotional vocabulary, and she'd been looking after her little sister, just a year younger than her, from the age of five, because her mum was widowed and had to go out to work. So they didn't really have the tools to teach me what it was like to feel. They didn't really have that sort of emotional language themselves. And so my dad had this, was a workaholic too, and drank a lot. I don't know whether he was an alcoholic, but he certainly drank a lot. And there was always this simmering, just under the radar rage. And so I just got really adept at taking the temperature of a room when I entered it. I used to imagine when I was a kid that his ears were like a thermometer, and I would look at how high the red was creeping up, and then I would be able to predict the way that the evening was going to go, and then adjust myself accordingly. You know, I could tell a story or do a dance or give him space or distract my mother, or, and that made me feel, you know, kind of powerful. It felt like a superpower, that ability to predict. And that's why not being able to see your faces is making little Gwyn feel scared, even though now I can show up for her and say, it's all right. It's all right. You know, we're safe today. We are, in fact, I'm in the safest place that I possibly could be, in a room full of addicts. How incredible is that? So yeah, that turning myself up and down and adjusting myself to the space that I anticipated other people needed me to be in, that when I discovered drugs, and alcohol, and of course in our program, alcohol is a drug, at the age of 12, it was such a great way. It was such a great solution of turning my feelings up or down. Because I was a kid that felt a lot. I felt very deeply. But I learned that expressing them was not safe. So to be able to numb or prolong or predict how I was going to feel, that kind of control was amazing. And so this double life sort of started for me at the age of 12. And so on the one side, I was this really, really good girl, that this overachiever that worked and worked and got all the grades. And, you know, I started learning piano at 5 and French horn at 9. And yeah, so I was able to be spectacular, that kept my parents happy. And I was bullied for it at school. So at the same time, I had this, and I hung around with the cool kids, and I had this air of grown-up responsibility because of my life at home. So I'd always be the one that would go and buy the booze, as it started off with. And I'd put my house keys on the till in the off license. And it had my mum's Peugeot keyring on it. And I'd sort of imagine that it was passing for car keys. And I'd say, I'd like this box of your finest chocolate, a bunch of flowers, and 7 litres of White Lightning cider, please. And just imagine that I was getting away with it with my incredibly grown-up voice. Kind of playing at being a grown-up, you know. Still feel like I do that. You know, recovery for me has been, someone said it on a meeting recently, simultaneously growing up and growing down. That's what I get to do here. I get to learn how to take responsibility for myself in a way that I never did before, that unmanageability. And I get to meet little Gwyn in all of those places of fear and shame and shame. Yeah, I'm in a step 4 at the moment, and I was really scared about doing it. You know, you hear a lot of stuff on meetings about step 4, but it actually feels like the most loving thing that I've ever done for myself, because I've got to go back to those places where I have felt shame, and I've kept them buried for such a long time, and I've been running from them in so many different ways pre-recovery. And I get to sit next to myself in those moments and take myself by the hand while I process the feelings that I didn't allow myself to feel then. When I came into recovery, I had so much shame. That's why fork in the road. I didn't know how or whether I was going to be able to carry on. I'd been lying and hiding from the people that loved me for years, actually. And the relief of, for the very first time, you know, telling the truth here and being met with compassion and not just compassion, with identification, the healing power of that, not just me, not on my own. And when I first came in, I was like, thank God I found this self-improvement program, you know, that I can homework my way into being somehow worthy of being lovable. And actually, it's just not that. That's not my experience. I've never been able to fix myself. That's what all my using was about. That's why I abandoned myself time and time again to things that I felt would fix me. My overachieving, my caretaking, my rescuing, the drugs, the booze, the sex, all of that stuff. And none of it did. And instead, this is like my sponsor says it's a program of self-acceptance. I get to accept myself as I am without trying to shapeshift. I get to accept my part in my past. And rather than I thought that the steps would be like a series of grades that I could get, or life skills or tools. And yeah, I have got the tools, but it's more been like a process of letting go for me. Just of dropping the stories. I'm so grateful for that. I guess I want to go back to those first couple of weeks and what they were like. And the reason that I'm thinking about them at the moment is I've just moved in with my partner, who has two small kids. They are 6 and 10 years old. And it's like having a couple of mini addicts in the house. They are so emotionally dysregulated. It is an absolute roller coaster. And you know what? I relate. I relate hard to them learning how to feel, because that's what it was like for me. Sometimes I can still feel it's like that. And the magical thing is that this last week, there's been some big feelings happening, and I want to go into hypervigilant fixing mode. I want to be overly responsible. I want to control everything that's happening. I want to control every relationship. And instead, I get to pause. I get to show up for myself, get to take the breath, to let the love in, to let grace in. And then I get to share with them what I've learned, which is that we don't have to stuff our feelings down, that they have information that can teach us things, and that sometimes they do feel so big that they can take us over, but they don't have to. And on Saturday, I sat next to the older kid, and she was just overtaken by this rage, and writhing around and squirming and shouting. She didn't have comfortable things to wear. It's a big thing for her, like comfort and feeling comfortable. And I just sat next to her and I was like, yeah, I know, you feel frustrated. It's scratchy. You don't want to wear it. You don't have to wear it. Where are all your clothes? You're angry. I understand. Do you want to hit this pillow? She said, I want to eat the pillow. I was like, I relate. I want to eat the house when I feel angry. I don't have to. I'm just going to sit with you. I'm going to hit the pillow for you. And we rode it out together. And at the end of it, she was just like, Gwynny, I think you've killed the pillow. And I was like, yeah, I probably have. The healing power of me being able to sit beside her in the same way that in those early days and weeks, people from the program sat beside me when my feelings felt so big. And, you know, I'm now able to sit beside my little Gwynny in the tantrums to hear, go, okay, what's going on here? What you got to tell me? That's all recovery. That is the ripple effect of recovery in my life. It runs through everything, is my experience. And I to be able to relate to how big those feelings feel in the body. So much of my addiction was about abandoning my body. I felt like it was at best an inconvenient housing for my head and my heart, and at worst just some kind of gross appendage that I wanted to escape from. And so being in my body those first few weeks and months was really painful. I had a lot of unprocessed grief coming up and a lot of practical stuff to do. I filed for divorce. I packed up the house where I'd planned to start a family of my own. It was just a lot of grief, a lot of letting go. And I didn't have work to fall back on either because I stopped all my projects. But I sat at the piano and I played my way into the Serenity Prayer, even though I didn't really understand what any of it meant. And I felt held by something. And I went out into the garden and started like a little ball on the ground and listened to the birds and danced my way into the day. And that's another gift of recovery, is the fact that I have this growing dialogue with my body, with what it has to tell me, to teach me, because it's like it remembers things that I don't. So I can drop into liquid time. And sometimes that, you know, initially particularly, that felt really, really scary when things came up for me. And now I can just be present with it in the same way that I sat next to little Noosh last week. And that's another gift. And I don't have to do it on my own. There are so many people waiting to sit beside me and walk beside me when anything gets too big. Still, I remember making my first phone call in recovery, and it felt so counter because I was so used to be the one being the one giving help. That's where I got so much of my value, like sleeping with my phone under the pillow in case anyone called me in the middle of the night. But then to ask for help felt painful and difficult and new. And now I'm so grateful that it's just part of my daily routine. And it's the first or second thing that I think of now is to call someone, jump on a meeting. I have so many, you know, having said that it's not about getting the tools are so vital for me today. So many things that I can do rather than picking up. I can walk by the sea, I can meditate, I can pray, I can call someone, I can write. Yeah, I have that pause now, I have that breath. And actually the word help is now, you know, one of my favorites. I say it probably every day in one form or another. I heard someone else on a meeting share recently, I don't know is a beautiful phrase because it allows my higher power to come in. And that's also my experience. I used to think I had to know everything. I can still, if I'm honest, I can still go to that place of like trying to figure it out, trying to figure out the world, trying to figure out the future. And then I remind myself that figuring it out is not a step, and take the breath and the pause and allow my higher power to come in. And what that higher power is changes all the time. Sometimes it's love with a capital L. Sometimes it's just the C. Sometimes it's the connectedness between two or more people. Sometimes it's grace. Sometimes it's a spiritual, just a particular spiritual principle that I need it to be. But I do know that whenever I pray or I breathe now, I feel held by something. And from somebody that was trying to hold the sky up, surrounded by post-it notes, now being somebody that goes to that place but then falls and is held, that for me is the magic of the program, and I don't have to use on any of it. I think that might be all I have. I'm just going to take a breath and check. But yeah, I think that's it. Thank you so much, Michael, for asking me to do this. You are such a huge part of my recovery journey. I am very, very grateful to you. I can't wait to hear all of you guys share, and thank you for helping me feel safe to be myself as I am today. Thanks, guys.